Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I am in a... Oh, good. I'm in a reboot loop, and I just... It wants to boot Windows. This is great. I installed the latest Big Sur beta yesterday.
Okay.
And it led me to a screen that said you need to install new software in order to boot this computer.
Ooh, that's fun. I hear it.
Oh yeah, I'm rebooting it again, and it wouldn't install. So then I booted into Mojave, and then I booted back into Big Sur, and it was not updated. And so I reinstalled the Big Sur update via software update, which it did, and it took forever to download it. And then it rebooted, and it was in Big Sur, and that was fine, except then I turned on this morning, and my computer booted into Mojave on my external drive. So And Mojave, delightfully, can't see Big Sur drives, so you can't set it as a startup disk. So then I rebooted and held down the option key and set my startup disk to be Big Sur, and then it rebooted itself again. And where we just left it was, it showed the Apple logo and the progress bar, and then suddenly it showed my boot camp Windows partition booting. Yeah, it's going great.
You know, it's funny. It's the first time that when I ran that update on my MacBook Air, which is on the Big Sur beta, it's the first time I feel like in a long time that when I told it, like, install it later, it actually did it. Because I woke up this morning and it was at the login screen. I was like, why am I at the login screen? Because usually I just put my computer to sleep.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I guess it must have applied the update. And so I logged in and it had removed my wallpaper. That was fun. And also I had my Scrivener windows open, and the Scrivener windows, something had happened and they were still slightly translucent. Like you could see through them. If I dragged one of them around, I could see the text in the one behind it.
It's spooky. Yeah, it's for Halloween. There goes.
Oh yes. Spooky season. I forgot.
Hey, I just rebooted into Big Sur and it only took like 8 reboots to get there. I wonder if that's going to be my life until the next beta now.
The other one that my favorite bug in Big Sur, it takes a very long time for it on my MacBook Air to, I guess, figure out what time it is, because I'll open it up in the morning and a lot of the times it'll have everything locked out, like I've hit my downtime, because I set it to like turn stuff off at like 11:30 or something like that.
Right.
And it'll sit there going like, you've exceeded your time limit on like literally every app. And I'll be sitting there, and you can hit, like, ignore limit for today, and it's like, okay, and then it just still continues showing you you've run out of time. And then, like, 5 minutes later, it's like, oh, I guess it's the morning now.
Yeah.
I guess you can see stuff. Oh. It's like, how hard could it be to figure out what time it is?
Computers.
Yeah. There's some rough edges.
Also, I got, this week I posted my review of the iPhone 12 and 12 Pro, and I do like the iPhone 12. Better. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets to have their own opinion. I saw somebody who yesterday on Twitter was saying how they felt like the 12 or the 11 Pro was with the curved edges felt better in their hand and was better. And I do not agree at all with that. I don't mind how the 11 Pro feels with the leather case on it. And if I was to put a leather case, which doesn't yet exist, on the 12 or 12 Pro, I would probably feel about the same about it, except that I don't feel like I even need a case with those edges because it doesn't feel slippery like the old phones did.
But I can't get away from it. I don't know why. Maybe I'm just that much more paranoid, but I did put on like a clear silicone case because I was feeling... I don't know.
I never like cases. I have to admit, after using a case,
I like them.
For several years, it is weird to have a loose phone in my pocket. But I'm gonna keep trying it, because I did that with the 4 and 4S and 5 and 5S, like that whole era. I didn't use a case and it was great. And so I'm gonna see if I can manage it. Although I did discover one thing with it, which is if I'm just wearing shorts and I'm sitting out in the backyard writing, the phone just slides right out of my pocket and onto the chair. That happens.
I've definitely done
which
that.
Which is fine. But I tell this, I mentioned the review only to say that one thing that I didn't test was 5G, which I'm skeptical of. I think, sure, it's the long-term whatever, but evolution, if you will. But the but it's a kind of a marketing gimmick, right? Like that's like let's be real about it. 5G really doesn't matter, and it really isn't relevant for almost anybody right now. And the debates are about, will it be at some point? Nationwide 5G generally is not particularly more impressive than 4G. And keep in mind, very few people are using it right now. The more people who use it, the less impressive it'll be. The millimeter wave stuff, the close-in stuff is interesting, but it's almost like a Wi-Fi thing in terms of its range, and you kind of have to be outside because it doesn't go through things. So again, well, it's not like it won't have applications and there won't be places that it will be better. Probably, but it's being oversold because it's something for them to use for the entire wireless industry, and that includes the phone makers like Apple and includes the carriers. Well, it is a way to get people to upgrade their devices because they're feeling like they're going to get more, and that is why my review not only doesn't mention 5G, but mentions it only as a footnote after the period at the end of the final sentence of the review, because that's how I feel about 5G. However, I did call my carrier or text my carrier, AT&T, and say, why is it that I can't even see the 5G settings? Do I need a new SIM card? And they said, yes, you probably do need a 5G SIM card. We will send that to you. Here's my phone number. All right. Here, we will send you a SIM card. And they sent me the SIM card, and it arrived in a FedEx envelope yesterday, and it's for my wife's phone number. So AT&T, you're doing a bang-up job. Bang-up job.
I will say I converted my SIM card back to an eSIM earlier this week, and it actually went pretty smoothly. I've discovered the secret to that is bothering them on Twitter, and then they let you cut through a bunch of the stuff and go to like a live chat where they actually seem to know what they're doing. Hmm. And it's pretty, you don't even have to do anything. You just give them like I think it's like the IMEI or whatever, and they're like, all right, just reboot your phone now, and you're good. I love that because I don't want to deal with SIM cards.
I need to use a SIM card because I review different models of phone and I need to move my information over there so I can use it. Like this is a perfect example. Apple's review units that they send me don't have SIM cards in them. How do I use them as phones? And the answer is I pop my SIM card out of my iPhone and I put it in the other iPhone and then I use that iPhone for a while. So I can't go to eSIM.
Right. I mean, that seems like a thing where it's a shortcoming of the eSIM like setup that could be fixed, right? In the same way that when I got my new phone, it had a SIM card in it that was from my number. And I was like, well, I don't even have a SIM card on the old phone. Like, why isn't there just an option to be like, let me scan like a QR code or something, right, and it transfers it over. You know, it seems like that's something that should be all too possible with a software-based SIM system. But, you know, it's still kind of in its infancy, so I understand that. But it does mean because I'm now in dual SIM mode, because I put back in the SIM card I have for the Mint Mobile plan,
right,
I cannot get 5G on either of those because of the dual SIM. I did briefly see the 5G settings pop up, I think, when I had my eSIM just for AT&T installed, but I don't have a 5G plan, so I don't know if that was just some weird glitch or something.
You have to have their unlimited plans to even get
it. Which I do not have and is not currently financially sensible for
me. I have it, and it's a lot of money, but Jamie basically destroyed our data cap. and even in these times of pandemic, I'm amused by the fact that she is using 80% of our data cap or our data herself. So we are on the unlimited plan. I decided once I had teenagers in my house that unlimited data for home internet and for cellular internet was the way to go because I was sweating. I hated having to sweat the data.
Every single month. I mean, I'm lucky because so I'm on a family plan with my wife and my parents, and I am the only one who uses a substantial amount of data, and that was only really when I was going places. So now, I mean, I'm looking at my wireless usage for this month. 1.8 gigabytes of 21.8 gigabytes used. So I got about 20 gigabytes left in the 16 days before my billing period is up. So we're not even going to get close to that. If I had 5G and I was going places, I might consider an unlimited plan. And eventually, they're all moving to systems where everything is unlimited, right? Like, they just want to encourage people to use phones. And so they're going to that thing where they throttle data rather than giving you a pool of data. And eventually, that will just be the way everything is, as the same way that we went with like talk minutes, right? Where it's like, oh, you get such and such number of minutes that you can talk on the phone every month. Or, hey, you get more on nights and weekends. Remember nights and weekends?
Oh, yeah.
Daytime minutes, all that stupid stuff. Yeah, they got rid of it all because it was stupid. And it really, in the end, just prevented people from using phones. And now that phones are so popular, I think everything will eventually just be unlimited plans with, you know, throttled data caps. But it's all going to be about the add-ons, right? It's all going to be about like, oh, we'll give you HBO Max, you know, or we'll give you Netflix or something like that. It's all going on to the sweeteners, not onto the data itself, because it's just a pipe, guys. I know you tried to avoid it, but it's just a pipe.
Yeah, not a pipe dream. An actual pipe. No, I'm a big fan of unlimited stuff, and I get that it costs money and there are cheaper options, and that's great. And you know, there are lots of other things, but for me, the unlimited thing made sense. And then when I look at the data usage, I'm like, oh yeah, I don't want
to.
The last thing
I hate having to think about it.
Patrol a high school or college student, and
yeah, that doesn't sound good.
It's not going to work anyway. So I now have a 5G SIM, but I think if I put it on one of my iPhone 12s, it's just going to be a duplicate of my wife's phone. Which, you know,
and might deactivate her phone.
Might deactivate
her
phone, in which case I would have to then take it out of that phone and put it in her phone, and hopefully it would work. But it won't be 5G. And anyway,
what a mess! What a mess!
I'm gonna on chat with AT&T right now.
Hi, AT&T.
You sent me a 5G SIM for the wrong number.
Oh man, I've been on so many live chats for customer service in the last week because I had
and you
a
get
whole...
the robot first, and then you get a person who doesn't know what they're talking about, and then you get
if you're me,
smarter robot.
You get three separate people who don't know what they're talking about, and like a day apart. Because I was on live chat to fix a pair of Bose headphones, and they made me go through a robot it's the Apple business chat, and they made me go through a robot, and I told the robot stuff. It's like, great, I'm going to pass this along to a human. And then like hours later, I think I got maybe a day later, I got like a human being like, hi, I'm so-and-so, how can I help? And I like said, oh, hi, I want help with this. No response for hours. Had to wait another day. I got that same message two more times where somebody introduced themselves with a different name every time and said, what can I help you with? And I told them, and then they would just never respond. So again, I found that taking to Twitter, well, unfortunate, is the most efficacious way to do it, because if I yell about how crappy their customer service is for an expensive product in which apparently a very cheap part breaks, which is a known issue that they have decided not to acknowledge, you get responses. So, short story there is now that I get to send it back and they'll send me a new set of headphones. And because my headphones aren't made anymore, I get the newer version of those headphones.
Nice.
Yay.
I also, for those who are saying, why didn't you just call AT&T?
Why would you do that to
yourself? I actually did that on Monday, and we were having a power outage in part of my area on Monday, and I literally couldn't get through because they'd be like, we see that there is currently a service interruption in your area. We're taking care of it. Click.
We know.
That's not why I'm calling. Yeah. And then all these automated services, I had this with Comcast too, the idea that you have to cajole it into giving you, because I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to intercept out people who have common issues and all that. But the problem is, if you know that it's a complicated issue,
man,
you still have to sort of like say things a bunch of times, and then finally it's like, all right, I don't know what is going on here, buddy. I'm going to pass you to a human
being.
It's like, yes, yes.
My best experience with this recently, when we bought our house, when we looked at it, we noticed there is a telephone pole in the backyard. I don't remember if I told this story. And it had wires strung from it to the apartment building next door, and then strung across our backyard, across our neighbor's backyard, into a telephone pole in his backyard, and then off into the like houses on the that were like backing us. And we're like, well, that's annoying. And they're like, well, you know, maybe you can call and have it removed or whatever. And we thought, all right, well, that's a battle. Let's gird ourselves for that battle at some point. Before we took possession of the house, the Verizon came and removed all the wires. Apparently, the owners had been complaining about this for many, many years, and then it finally got done like a week before we closed on the house. But there was still a pole there. So I had to call Verizon a bunch, and I first called our city being like, so who do I talk to about this? And like, well, you know, you can call Verizon. Let me get you a number that'll actually get you to somebody who can help you rather than like the general number. And they went away and they came back and they're like, every single number that we, the city, have to get in touch with people is now out of service. So your only choice is to call the like one Verizon number. So I started doing that on the regular, where I would, you know, say I have a telephone pole issue and keep getting kicked to somebody, and they'd be like, well, we can put something in the engineering queue, but it's a totally different system from ours, so we don't really know, but, you know, we'll call you back at some point. And I had to go through many different people, and I eventually got connected. This is amazing. Like, I actually got somebody to come out like a week or two ago and actually look at it and be like, oh, yeah. Yeah, that's not doing anything. We can probably just take that down. That should be easy. Granted, hasn't been done yet, but I was ready for that like long process of being like, I'm just going to have to yell at you for months and maybe years on end until you eventually take this down, which I may still have to do. But it was definitely a thing where it's like you call into Verizon customer service and like, we assume you want help with either your Fios connection or your Verizon mobile account. What is a telephone pole? You know, it's like, it's these things that you put everywhere in the city for like 100 years.
That's wild. Well, it's great if you don't have to have that. I mean, that the wires are gone and the
it's pole. It's just a pole. There's just literally a pole. Just a pole there. And like, it was so, they were asking about a number
pirate flag
at one point
on it or something.
Yeah. Several people, including our real estate agent, suggest to us, like, well, it's got like the climbing things. You could probably just climb up and like chainsaw it off one section at a time and nobody would ever know. And I'm like, that's fair. We'll go through the right channels first.
Sure.
If they decide to not respond, eventually,
before
I
you call timber on it.
Yeah, why not? There's literally nothing connected to it. It's just a pole.
It's just a pole.
Plus, then we got firewood.
Yeah, sure. And again, you could just put a flag up there. Put a
pirate
flag.
Sure, I guess that's true. It's in the back of the yard.
Nobody's
I don't know.
See
it's a
it.
Weird place.
All right.
It's a weird place.
Strange. Customer service. What you gonna do?
Yeah. Speaking of plans, as we were just discussing, I'm curious. The Apple One is out this morning. The Apple One bundle.
Oh, the Apple One.
Oh. I decided
a bundle
as
appeared.
The heavens
lo,
opened,
the heavens opened and a bundle was put on the earth.
I think I'm not bothering with it for a while because Apple just extended the Apple TV Plus subscriptions, and because I just bought a new phone, they are giving out 3 months of Apple Arcade.
Ah.
And I kind of sat there going, I already have 200 gigabytes of cloud storage. So the only thing I would get out of that mid-range plan is, I mean, I guess I would get another 200 gigabytes of cloud storage, but I'm not even using the 200 gigabytes I have now. And a family plan of music, which is nice, but not critical.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't think there's any reason for me to spend more money. Maybe when those free trials are up, then I'll think about it.
It's going to save me money, and I'm interested in Fitness Plus, and I wouldn't mind having
News
Plus
big,
for free when Fitness Plus launches. But, yeah, I've got, and I'm unclear, like, because...
Does it extend things?
If I sign up for it, but I've got free TV Plus for the next 6 months, does that come off of it or whatever? And I haven't looked into that yet. I may sign up for it specifically to figure this out because it's in the interest. I do a lot of stuff that it's like, as a consumer, I wouldn't do.
Yeah.
But because it's my job, I'm like, well, in the interest of science, let's see. And if it costs me an extra $40 over the course of 6 months or something like that, it's like, well, it was for a story and I got my answer, right? Like, I do some of that. So maybe that'll be what it is. I don't know. No response from AT&T tech support, by the way, just while we're on it. Yeah, I mean, we talked about the Apple One bundle. I think it'll be interesting to see how it goes and how people respond to it. I definitely think that there are people for whom it's going to be a good deal or will encourage people, you know, lower the price of the Apple services they're less excited about. But, you know, Apple Music is at its core. So in the end, if you're not a believer in Apple Music over Spotify, Apple bundles aren't going to work for you because that's...
I'm curious to know. I mean, obviously, as Tim Cook said in their call yesterday, you know, that service is still a big deal for them. And they're thinking about other services. And the question is, well, now that you've created something called Apple One, it has a strong implication that any future services that you come up with will somehow be included in this. So that price structure may get rejiggered, I guess, from time to time as they roll out new services and decide, well, how do we include that? Is it the same price? Do we have to go up a price? Are we going to make things add-ons for the Apple One bundle?
Right, that may be. Did you notice in the call, one of the things that a clever analyst asked, they try to get Tim Cook to give away secrets that he's not going to give away, asked about the bundle and said, you know, what about hardware in the bundle? What about iPhones
what about,
or things
what
like
about
that?
About an AirPod?
Bundle?
I think he said AirPods and iPhone bundle or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And Tim Cook's response was funny in that it was a non-answer. He was like, well, if you think about it, a lot of people are having success with installments, including us and the carriers and other partners, with installments, which is essentially people like paying monthly. And so that's been successful. And I'm like, okay, what does that mean? Does that mean that you don't need to do a bundle of hardware or consider that because other people are doing it? Or does it mean you do want to do it because it's been successful?
That's exactly the answer you want to give. I mean, like, you could argue that the iPhone upgrade program is a great bundle, right? Because not only do you get a new phone, but you get AppleCare. It's bundled together and you pay it one fee every month, right? That kind of is a bundle in some ways.
It is.
If you threw AirPods in, like, you know, next year, if they said, hey, you can pay this much, and if you pay an additional $10 a month, $5 a month, whatever, we'll throw in an AirPods Pro set. Mm-hmm. But I think the problem with some of those is now you have to figure out what's that upgrade cycle look like, right? Like, it's very easy with the phones where it's like, well, we know there's a new phone every year.
Right.
So you're guaranteed pretty much the ability to swap it out. But, you know, people probably don't necessarily want to swap out their AirPods every year, or they might not revamp the AirPods every year. So, like, what other products does that really make sense on?
Yeah, maybe it's a every 2 years you get a new set of headphones, or who knows what it is.
But I could see that for something like an iPad, maybe. But again, the iPad refresh cycle is a little more irregular, tends to be more like 18 months. So how do you deal with that? You know, I think it's very easy for the phone. I think the watch potentially could be another place where it might be more compelling, because it does also seem to refresh on a pretty yearly schedule right now. But yeah, a lot of its other stuff is more regular. I can't imagine, you know, a Mac upgrade. I can imagine paying for a Mac in installments, but I can't imagine an upgrade program, because again, people tend to keep their Macs for many, many years and they don't refresh on a regular, predictable basis.
Yeah, I don't know. Tim did a lot of interesting non-answers. I have a bunch of notes of things that didn't get in the Macworld piece that I linked to today, and it didn't, you know, I've got that I wanted to talk about, because he did a lot of interesting non-answers. Mm-hmm. Something I mentioned in Macworld is that he also had an area of interest.
Oh yeah.
Which I think the last time they had an area of interest, it was the wrist.
Ooh.
And then they came out with the Apple Watch. But yeah, it was a question about financial tech and the success of Apple Card and Apple Pay and Apple Cash and Apple Pay Cash and all of those things. And his response was like, yeah, we love it. It's great. It's definitely an area of interest for us. And then, you know, again, that's all he's going to say. But I think that's a huge signal that Apple is, in their quest for more services revenue especially, has been very happy with how their entry into financial products has gone. And,
well,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as he pointed out, the preponderance of Apple Pay, and he specifically called out how the U.S. was lagging behind in contactless before the pandemic.
Yeah, he says, I think this is going to be the thing that brings the U.S. into the future.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. I mean, I know so many people who now will, like, I don't pay if I can't use Apple Pay. And I cannot remember. I actually went to get cash this week at an ATM for the first time in a long time, because I would need to get my car inspected. It's a yearly car inspection thing. And I was like, oh, sometimes the gas stations, you know, they don't take credit cards or whatever, depending on where I go. So I'll just get, it's like $30. I'll just get some cash to make sure I have some. And they took Apple Pay. And I was like, well, that I'm not paying with cash then. I'm just going to use my watch. I'm going to scan my card and I'm done. And I thought to myself, when was the last time I paid cash for something? And I really don't remember.
We have a farmer's market on Fridays. In fact, it's going on right now. And I was running.
That's funny me to think of, because it's snowing here, Jason.
Oh, it's 51 degrees here. It's not warm, but it's sunny. So the farmer's market's out there. And last Friday I'm running, and because I ran a 5K, a virtual 5K on Sunday. So I did a run on Friday, and then I ran on Sunday. And on Friday, I get to the end of my run, and I'm walking back home, and I realize that I'm right by the farmer's market. And I think, oh, right, I should go over there, because there's a bakery that's in West Marin, Brick Maiden Bakery, and they're always there. And they have great, you know, fresh baked that morning sourdough loaves and stuff. Really good. It's such a treat to have a really nice fresh baked loaf of bread that you know, everybody in the house is happy to eat. And it makes good sandwich bread, and it makes good grilled. I mean, it's great. And I have nothing. You know this. When I run, the only tech that I have with me is AirPods and my Apple Watch. But the bread stall at the farmer's market, it's Apple Pay. It's a square. It's a square with NFC thing. Because again, in pandemic era, they don't want to handle cash.
Sure.
So they have the square reader, which also has a little card in chip reader in it.
Yep.
And so me with literally nothing on my person except Apple Watch and AirPods, I bought a couple of loaves of bread, paid with my watch, wasn't even planning on going there. I was just running, and then I walked home with the bread. It was great. And it was nice. One of those examples of like, this is how the world works.
I've had a bet for a while, and Apple hasn't done this, but I would be surprised if they didn't, you know, with this conversation about it. I think they're perfectly happy that, you know, Square, Toast, all these other vendors have these POS systems that work with Apple Pay. But I also can't help but think that they'd love to basically include NFC reader hardware, or I believe some of these devices already work as that in hardware. It's just not enabled.
Right.
To essentially just turn any iPhone or iPad into a payment terminal.
Right.
To me, that seems like, why wouldn't you do that? Like maybe you provide POS software that could be a financial a tool or technology of some sort that they might want to involve themselves in. I don't know, but it certainly seems compelling to be like, hey, you don't have to buy anything else. You buy an iPad, it's a payment terminal. You buy an iPhone, it's a payment terminal.
Yeah, I was thinking it seems esoteric, and yet if they can put that in the hardware at some point, why wouldn't they? Even if all it means is that their partners like Stripe don't have to, you know, build little plastic boxes that you attach to your iPad that you're using as a terminal.
I mean, open it to third parties, but also have just I still think that the easy ability to be like, hey, I want to pay you $20 or something, right? Like, I can just, you know, hold my phone up to your phone or something. And I mean, I can do that with Apple Pay Cash right now if I send a message, but I need to have your contact info, right? If you're at the farmer stand, for example, and you just want to be like, hey, I want to just give you, you know, $20. I need a piece of hardware. You got to go through this complicated dance of like, all right, I'm going to get your contact information. Now I'm going to text you and send you Apple Cash or like Venmo you or something like that. Whereas if you could just, you know, double click, get Face ID, tap it on their phone, bam, you're good to go. And I think to me, there is a really compelling use case in there. And it seems like the investment in that is fairly minor given that most of the hardware is already there. It's really just kind of a software thing. So I don't know, but I would not be surprised to see that pop up at some point.
Yeah, and these things are related, right? Because the installment plan and the payment plan for Apple hardware is essentially a financial product of a sort. Mm-hmm. And instead of it being a subscription service, it's a loan thing, basically. But, you know, in the end, a lot of people, especially in our sphere, complain about the subscriptionification of the world. And I think I think there's good reason for that.
Sure.
But it's the same. Okay. Let me make a parallel here. Why does spam exist? Why when you make a donation to a charity, do you get flooded with mail from the charity? And you're thinking to yourself, you're spending money on mail to me that I donated to you to get me to donate more money to you for you to send me more mail. Why don't you just take the money and use it for the charitable reason that I gave it to you? The answers are the same, which is they do it because it works. They do it because the cost of mailing out things or sending out spam or whatever is less than what they get back for doing it. So they do it because it's worth it to do it. And that is the thing about the subscriptionification of the world is the reason everything is going to subscriptions is because it works. And you can see it. You may not be into it, or you may not like it for specific things like software. And I'm not saying that it's good. I think there are cases where subscription software is good and cases where it's questionable about whether it's the right thing to do. But I do think that in terms of buying psychology, people are receptive to subscriptions. It's a set it and forget it. It's good for the people selling the subscriptions, because a lot of times you'll just keep paying and you don't even think about it. We're in a period now where people are not maybe noticing it quite as much, but in the long run, people are going to notice because everybody's going to have everything as a subscription and they're going to see a monthly outflow. But it happens because it works. And in some cases, it's the most harmonious way to do it. Like, this is the argument about the phone is, isn't it better to pay the same amount so you have, you know exactly what your outflow is every single month? Mm-hmm. Rather than once every year or two or three, you have to pay $1,000 for a phone. It's not necessary. If you've got lots of money, it's not the best deal financially. The best deal is to pay that money. But for people who don't have lots of money, it's certainly more understandable and manageable to have a constant amount. I pay this much for my phone and my phone service, and I do it, and I get a new phone every 2 years or year or whatever. Like, and that's why it happens, is because it actually works, even though I know it annoys a lot of people. It works. So Apple being involved in that and sort of saying more things are subscriptions from Apple, like, that's how it's going to be. You know, I'm not sure it works for something like a Mac or an iPad. But maybe it does. I don't know. But because of the iPhone, it does seem to work. That this plan where you take, as Tim said on the phone, the residual value of your previous phone, and then, you know, and then you get a new phone, and it all just kind of works out that you get to have a new phone every year, but you have to give your old phone back. That's what you do on your plan.
Right. And you have to keep in mind that when you're paying that price, because it's amortized over 2 years and you're generally upgrading every year, you're never paying the full price of any individual phone. However, because you're paying consistently, you know, you are potentially paying more overall, right? Because if you're paying $50 a month for 5 years, you have paid a lot of money. You have gotten a phone for that every year, and you have never paid the value of those individual phones, but you certainly have paid more than you would pay if you only upgraded your phone, say, every 2 or 3 years. So the value proposition is different. It's nice to have that consistency and that expectation. And it does feel sometimes like you're saving money and you are getting something for that money that you're spending. But it's not for everyone the most efficient use of money, because if you're someone who holds on to a phone for a while and then maybe even sells it after that, you probably will do better financially than just paying for the upgrade program.
Right. Anyway, I get people who don't like the idea of having a monthly plan, and I think a lot of it has to do with almost like a feeling of indebtedness. The idea, like, well, now they're just nicking me every 30 days instead of letting me, like, I want a thing, I pay the money, I get the thing, I walk away. And I get that.
It reminds me of being a kid and signing up for the AOL subscriptions. Like, they would give you like a free month, and then beyond that, you'd need to put in a credit card. And of course, being a 15-year-old, I didn't have a credit card.
Right.
And so we would go through these perambulations of like signing up for the free month, canceling, signing up for another free month, canceling, like, and like trying to go through all the different credit cards my parents had so I could at least register for the free month. And I hated the idea of like, oh my God, they're going to charge me, you know, for every month, or like when the games first early like subscription online games came out,
you're
like, well, I was never going to pay every month for a game. And it's like, I still feel that natural reticence sometimes, but it's also, as an adult with my own disposable income, it's a lot easier to like, it's $5 a month, whatever.
Well, I mean, this is the thing about software, and I don't want to open this can of worms too much right now, but like, people, there are a lot of people who hate subscription software, and I get it. But I think the reason they hate it is because they really whether they realize it or not, when you buy software once and you use it for a very, very long time, you're kind of getting away with it. Right?
Yeah.
You're kind of getting away with it, because most of that software, the people who are making it, or person in some cases who's making it, your one purchase has to, you know, every time you buy an upgrade, you're paying for their ongoing development of that app. And I get the idea of like, well, I just want to buy it and have it come in a box and install it on my computer. And then I save the computer for 5 years, and I save the software for 5 years, and I never update the OS, and I just use it for 5 years. Like, okay, I get it. But then after those 5 years are up, you need to get a new computer and you need to get a new version of that software. And then you want to pay again. But what if that software is gone because you didn't give them any money for 5 years? Like, this is the challenge with that. And I understand as a buyer how you may feel like it's better. But I would argue that one of the reasons people are so angry about subscription software stuff these days is because they were really getting a good deal. They were working the system. You could jump off. People who frequently would jump off the update train for years for many versions and then pop back in, you know, mm-hmm. to save money. They were doing that. Yeah, they were doing that to save money. They were working the system to their benefit, which is fine. But it's kind of not how the act of maintaining and updating software works. And the subscription model actually fits it better. Yeah. But I get that psychologically, some people want to, like with an iPhone, some people want to put down the money. And I think, and some people don't mind having it be a subscription charge. And that's why I think the best software model offers people the ability to pay a chunk of money for stability for a long time versus a subscription. Like, you want to buy lifetime of this, great, pay us this. And then those people can be like, great, but that's going to be a high price. It's a hard thing, but it's one of those things where it actually kind of does make more sense. And a lot of things, I'm less convinced of it with physical goods, but things like software where it's always being updated, it is the right model for most software. It really is. And I know that it's frustrating because people are used to, especially on the App Store, paying a dollar for something and then getting updates forever. But, you know, it's clearly not sustainable to do it that way. So, sure. And I don't mind. I mean, again, as a kid, I had Photoshop, and it was first it was from my college newspaper, and then it was I got it from institutions that bought it, and then I used it. Was it legal? Was it licensed? Probably not. And then my employer had a site license and all that. So when I went out on my own, like, I've been using Photoshop for 20 years. Well, Photoshop used to cost an inordinate, it was like $800 for a copy of Photoshop or something, $500. It was impossible for a young person, for a student, to buy Photoshop. But these days, I can get Photoshop for $110, $120 a year, Photoshop and Lightroom in a bundle. It's like, are you kidding? And Microsoft Office is the same way. I get Office and storage space and all sorts of other stuff for $100 a year. It's like, I love that because it just, I don't have to think about, like, I'm going to buy Microsoft Office and spend a lot more money than I want. But then it'll work for a while. But then at some point, and I won't know when, I'll suddenly have that moment where everything screeches to a halt and it's like, oh no, now it doesn't work anymore. I have to buy it again. And instead I pay them $100 a year and I just have it forever. And it always works and I get all the updates. Like, I don't know. I get that it doesn't work for everybody, but the reason that they do it is it actually better fits their business model and it does actually work for a lot of the people who are paying the money. So. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not saying all subscription stuff is the right way to do it and that it's right for everybody, but like, I see why Apple looks at this and goes, area of interest.
We were working on AR, but now subscriptions for everything.
Subscription AR subscriptions I was listening to Dithering, the podcast that John Gruber and Ben Thompson do, and they've been talking about it in terms of gaming, and it's the same kind of thing, right? Where, like, the new Xbox, you can pay a monthly fee for 2 years or whatever and get an Xbox and the Xbox online service, and they bundled the hardware and the online service together into a subscription plan, and it's the same thing, right?
Which makes sense, because, I mean, as somebody who's owned a couple Xboxes, except with very few, things that don't sort of fit the pattern, you really want the online.
You really do.
Like, you want at least the basic. I mean, you don't need to, now. Of course, Microsoft wants to sell you their, like, game streaming service as well.
Right.
But, you know, there's some compellingness to that too, right? Like, do you want to pay for a game?
Increasingly, the hardware is becoming an extrusion of an online service in a way. Yeah. And so this is like the last shoe dropping, which is, it's literally when you pay us for this level of the online service, you just get the hardware. That's it.
Yep. Yep. That's where we're going.
Yeah. I know. And yes, I understand why that's where we're going. You can like it or not like it, but
sure.
That's why we're going there. That's totally why we're going there. You have any other thoughts about the results since before we go? Like, that was yesterday.
I'm just delighted to see the Mac do? Have its best, I mean, a business that's been around for 36 years, and it has its best quarter ever, and
it just makes me
so happy. Yeah, by $1.6 billion in revenue, and I just
Just to be clear, it was the biggest Mac quarter by $1.6 billion.
Yes, exactly, $9 billion in revenue. I mean, that is hard to think of another product, especially in technology, that old, that still has that kind of legs behind it. I mean, I am excited. I've been excited about the Mac all year since WWDC, you know, with the whole processor transition. This is all, you know, and this is people who are not us buying Macs, right? These are people who are, I'm suddenly working from home or going to school from home. I need a computer, right? Like that is what's bolstering a lot of these sales.
For sure. And iPad, similarly. They think that's, although somebody has said, surely these are deferred upgrades and you're going to have sales softness in the future because of it. And that's probably true. But what they asked Tim Cook that, he's like, no, I mean, we're anticipating double digit year-over-year growth in the holiday quarter as well for those.
Yeah, right. So, and I think what it says to me is, like, I at least look in business, it's always about the bottom line, and Apple has clearly invested a lot of money in this processor transition, and if they wouldn't do that if they didn't think the Mac had a future in it. And it is gratifying to see the financials reflecting that, because at the end of the day, that's what's going to continue to drive investment in this product line, is the fact that it makes money. And so the fact that people are out there buying Macs is going to encourage Apple to continue putting a lot of time and energy and money into improving the Mac.
Yeah.
So that's great. That is great.
They're also clearing out their stock of Intel Macs, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yep, sure.
But yeah, it's good for all Mac users, because it means there are that many more Macs out there,
yep,
and that many more reasons to make software for the Mac and to support the Mac and all of those things, which is
it's alive and well. Great.
And I do think that there is a component of this, which is, the question is this a COVID-19 related thing that is temporary, or is it more like what we said about Apple Pay, where it's more of a sea change? And I don't know the answer to that. But
either.
Like, you could argue that if we're a world that's more online, it's not just, I have to work from home and my laptop is bad at home, I'm going to buy a new laptop. Or, all my employees are working from home and I'm going to buy them all new laptops. It might also be, we're all more online now, our family of four, and we used to have a laptop.
Yeah.
And we can't do that now. We need four laptops, right? Like, I think if you're living in a more online world, you're going to need more devices per household, and that benefits Apple.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that's exactly that. It's the, you know, we used to have a laptop that I would use my email and the kids would watch Netflix on or play games on or do their homework on, et cetera. Or maybe you had a couple laptops. But I think now, if both the kids need to be on their remote classes at the same time and you're on Zoom calls for work, like, this is one of many things that is going to experience some changes between that, the payment stuff we talked about, things like network infrastructure, I think, are going to be a big deal going forward. These, you know, the companies providing cable and fiber and all that stuff are, I'm sure, seeing much higher usage than they traditionally do. So it's going to be interesting to see how they react to that and what kind of changes get made, if any. But for Apple, I think it's true that, you know, as powerful as phones are and as powerful as, you know, iPads are, the Mac still has a place. All these devices have their utility and their, you know, they're not all direct substitutes for one another, right? You may still want to have an iPad and a Mac. You may have a phone too. You probably have a phone, right? But like, when you could get by using a phone before, and a lot of these people, I think, to your point, Jason, like, they would go into work and they would use the computer there and then they would come home. And maybe they don't have a computer. Maybe they do most of their stuff on their phone at home. And all of a sudden, you need a computer. And the kids need, So I think it's great. Apple is positioned very well. And as I think you said well in your piece, Tim Cook has to navigate that trickiness of being like, well, we're doing gangbusters because this is great for us. And yes, it's a pandemic and we are trying to be responsible and thoughtful about how we deploy our resources.
Yeah. Yeah, I like another thing that I always look for in these, which is Apple's tune about like how they have done their work this year has definitely changed. And now they talk about it and they say, you know, that some portion of what they do is remote and is working great. And I'll believe it when I see it, but what I would like to believe is that in the long run, Apple is going to be more conducive to having groups with remote work. Not all their groups, obviously, but some of their groups. And we'll see how that goes, because I know from personal experience that changing company culture is very hard. Company cultures exist so that they don't change. That's the truth about that I had to learn the hard way in trying to drag a magazine into the web is you build corporate cultures and structures for continuity. The point of them is that a corporation is not just the people who inhabit it. It is the culture that survives the changes in people. And that's how you maintain continuity. It makes it very hard to change culture, though, because it is fighting against you. That's the purpose of it, is to fight against change. So I saw, I forget who it was. Was it maybe Stephen Wilson, who does podcasts, posted about a job that is on the Apple team. And I see some developers who are like, join us here. And some of these jobs get posted and they're like, hey, join us on our team. It was the podcast one. It was like, this is in Culver City. And I thought, is it? And if it is, why is it? And again, there are jobs that are going to require people to be in a particular place. But I know from my experience, and so many people in our business who were kind of contacted about Mac App Store and the App Store editorial team in general, where our friend Dan Frakes works now. Those jobs were all like, we have a team in Cupertino who does this. So you are in the office in Cupertino every day. And Dan, our friend, lives like two exits up the freeway from Infinite Loop. Like, it's super easy for Dan. But I had that moment because, the staff at Macworld, we have people all over the country, including you, right? And I thought, why? 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 If you're writing copy and stuff, do you have everybody go into an office in Cupertino? Why? And that if somebody won't move to the South Bay, somebody won't move to California, they're not going to get the job, even if they might be great at it, and you could pay them less, probably, given the cost of living. So that's, for me, that's the question. Is Tim Cook is talking a good game now, but I want to watch that, because I'm skeptical that when it comes time for people to go back in their offices, that there isn't a bunch of, you know, and it may vary from manager to manager, but there isn't a bunch of, all right, come on back. And then, you know, one of their people is like, I moved to Montana. And what do you do then? But because, like, the truth is, I think we talk about Apple Pay changing, the usage in the U.S. changing because of COVID. This is my open question, which is, let's see how it goes and how many of these groups that realize that they can use online collaboration tools and video conferencing and stuff like that, which tools that, mind you, have been there for ages, because we use them at Macworld for people like you and Dan and Chris Breen and Rob Griffiths and Shelly McFarland and all these people who are not, and Lex, right? People who never worked in San Francisco.
Yep.
Many of us. Yep. But everybody else just discovered it, right? They're like, oh, isn't it nice that all of these online collaboration tools were just laying right here for when we had a pandemic? Yep. What happens on the other side of it? Does everybody realize that those are tools in the palette and then they can change the way they work? Or do they just go back to the way it was? And there'll be, I think, a little bit of both. And it's going to be interesting to see
where... It's not a switch-flipping scenario, right? It's not like... we're done and tomorrow it's back to work, everybody.
I think that's the truth of it. And I think that actually is a positive for remaining with remote. And I'm not saying like every job, again, because every time I talk about this, people complain about it. Like, not every job can do it. It's not conducive for every person. Like, all of those things are true. But what drives me nuts is people who have these jobs and roles and tasks that can be done remotely and just fine. Like, everybody talks, oh, but what if you run into somebody when you're getting milk out of the refrigerator and you have a moment of creativity? And it's like, all right, yeah, you can also have that in Slack. Like, yes, but no. But it frustrates me because, you know, I could not have hired you.
Yeah.
In a situation like that. I could not have hired Chris Breen. I couldn't have hired Dan Frakes. I couldn't have hired Rob Griffiths. I couldn't have hired Lex. There's so many people who worked at Macworld who were really great. And we built a really good group of talented people. I think the best group of writers about Apple ever assembled under one roof, except for one thing. It wasn't under one roof because we were able to do it remotely. And we would have been way worse as an organization if we made everybody live in San Francisco. So that part is the part that makes me hope that organizations will find the plot and not do that so much anymore.
Yep, I agree. I mean, it was, you know, benefit nothing else of like the fact that I was in a different time zone. Sometimes that was beneficial.
Oh,
right?
you and I didn't even mention Jim. I mean, we didn't hire Jim and Peter from Mac Central. We inherited them when we bought Mac Central, when Colin Crawford just went and bought Mac Central. But having you on the East Coast, having Jim Dalrymple when he was living in Halifax, Nova Scotia, plus four Atlantic time, you know, we would on the West Coast, you know, we're rubbing the sleep out of our eyes, and there's like 10 news stories posted by Jim and Peter because they're up at what for us is like before the crack of dawn. So powerful to do that. So I don't know. Anyway, I'm going off about it, but it's like one of those things that when I hear Tim Cook talk about it, I'm both encouraged and also skeptical because I realize that if you're a leader like Tim Cook is, you can say all the right things, but it's your managers who have to believe it and implement it. And that's like, does one level down from Tim also believe in it? Maybe, maybe not. What about two levels down? Maybe, maybe not. And I owe to be a fly on the wall at Apple about how they bring people back physically and when they choose not to. Because Apple's never talked about it like Twitter or Facebook or somebody where they're like, sure, move to Montana. You never have to come back, right? Apple doesn't talk about that. But I do wonder if behind the scenes there are things where people in various groups are like, I'm going to go to Nevada now, right? Like, I'm Colorado, Rocky Mountain High, Colorado, I'm gone. I don't know. I don't know. We'll find out.
I would like to have seen Montana, Jason.
I would have. Oh, reference acknowledged. All right. Well, this has been such a busy season for this stuff. And before we go, I should say Tim Cook, this was in my Macworld piece too. Given the opportunity, Tim Cook did not sweep the "we're going to release Apple Silicon Macs by the end of the year" under the rug. He didn't. He said, "We've got more surprises coming."
So exciting.
So, yeah. So I want to say it's the end of October, and this wraps up our totally busy bananas. But it's not, because there are more iPhones yet to ship. And there's another event that's going to happen with Apple Silicon Macs in it. So Apple is just going to keep grinding us all the way through to Christmas.
That's only in the Apple world. Next week should be nice and quiet, right?
Are you referring to something regarding current events?
No, I was just talking about the week after Halloween. Always a very quiet week. Yeah. Nothing much happening.
Woof. Woof.
Well, see you in Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.